What I want to talk about this morning is less a sermon than a sentiment, than an emotion, than a sort of appeal. And it ties together so much of not only what we experienced this morning, but what we experienced this week. Yom HaAtzmaut, after all, is looked at a certain way, a very parochial holiday. It's about us, it's about Israel, and my guess is it doesn't make much of a ripple in Calcutta. Elsewhere in the world, not so much their holiday. But one of the things that we tried to do here at Sinai this week is reflect what is really the original, the deeper, the Jewish meaning of Yom HaAtzmaut, which is not only nationalistic, although it's nationalistic too, but it's about the Jewish mission in the world. And the Jewish mission in the world is supposed to embrace everyone, not only Jews. Remember that it takes a long time in the Bible before you get to the first Jew. God creates human beings. Remember that even though the Christian New Year begins with the birth of Jesus, that is, with the beginning of Christianity, the Muslim New Year with the traveling of Muhammad, the Greek New Year with the first Olympics, the Jewish New Year begins with the creation of the world, not the beginning of Judaism. Our mission is a universal mission, and therefore we try to make Yom HaAtzmaut more universal. And miracle of miracles, we had a Meet the Faiths dialogue that not only involved Jews and Christians and Muslims, but had in it Hindus and Buddhists who attended, who said, we want to be part of this next year. And we had a concert where Muslims and Jews side by side offered prayers on Yom HaAtzmaut in a synagogue. Quite a remarkable and wonderful thing. And part of it is a product of the recognition that it's a very powerful temptation in human life to put ourselves in boxes. And the way you put yourself in a box is by declaring other people to be outside your box. This person did something I disapprove of, he or she is outside the box. This person is part of a group I don't like, so they're outside. And the first person who told us not to do that, although person doesn't really apply here, the first place we learn not to do that is from God. I don't know how many of you paid attention to the Haftarah this morning, but if you didn't, let me read you the opening words. To me, O Israelites, you are just like the Ethiopians, declares the Lord. True, I brought you up from the land of Egypt, but I brought the Philistines up from Kaphtor and the Arameans from Kir. In other words, I don't only care about you. Guess what? Other people had slavery and freedom too. Because God is bigger than Judaism. God is everything. And therefore, the extent to which Judaism is going to be a reflection of God's mission in this world, Judaism has to be bigger than Judaism. And has to speak to and embrace and reach out to others who have different ideas. It's not that there are no lines. Of course there are lines and there are principles and there are people who are destructive and people who are dangerous, and we all know that. I don't have to stand up in front of you and say there are people who are dangerous and destructive. We're Jews, we know this. But sometimes we forget how much you can bring other people in if the first face you show them is not the face of rejection, but the face of acceptance. The Torah, thousands of years before in the Talmud, actually anticipated Robert Frost's poem. Frost wrote a poem called Fire and Ice that goes, some say the world will end by fire, some say by ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. 2,000 years before frost, in the Talmud, we're taught the Torah has a path of fire and a path of ice. So what is one to do? You walk in the middle. Extremism on one side or on the other is dangerous. Instead, you try to bring people in the middle path so the world is not destroyed by fire nor by ice. Jews have a lot of friends in this world. Sometimes we concentrate on talking about all the people who don't like us. But there was Rick Warren, who, after all, is the most influential clergyman probably in the world, did the inauguration for the president, is on the cover of Time magazine, and he's up here saying, I'm an honorary member of Sinai Temple and speaking at the Unity Concert. We have a lot of friends. The problem is, we don't always know how to open our arms and embrace them. We're very good at identifying our enemies. We're not so good at welcoming our friends, at thanking them, at saluting them, at bringing them into our homes and into our lives. We are, after all, a very small people. We need friends. And not only that, but there are people who are on the fence, who really don't know, who don't pay attention. I know that this might be a shock to you, but there's a lot of the world that doesn't follow Israel day by day. Such people need to be embraced, not pushed away. We need to show them that we share the same ideals in this world, which we do. That we all want peace. That we all want a good life for our children and for our grandchildren, and anyone who doesn't is the enemy. Anyone who cares more about destroying someone else than building a decent life is the enemy. Not any group, not any religion, but a certain ideology and a certain type of person. That's who we combat. That's what Israel has been fighting for years. And that's what we tried to show when we opened the synagogue to anyone who would celebrate and sing with us. There were people, by the way, who objected to the idea that a Muslim offered prayers on Yom HaAtzmaut. And I thought, how narrow, how foolish. Do you know what courage it takes for a Muslim to stand up in a synagogue on Yom HaAtzmaut and offer prayers? I salute them and embrace them and think how wonderful it is that we have a Muslim offering prayers and a black choir and an evangelical preacher, and then we sang HaTikvah. That's what you can do if you show other people that you want them, that you value them, that you embrace them. Instead of the automatic antibody reaction, which is, you're not exactly like me, therefore you're outside the box. Unfortunately, Jews do it in the Jewish world as well. We push each other away if we aren't exactly the same kind of Jews. But I have to tell you, it's very difficult sometimes to figure out who's a good Jew and who's not a good Jew. It's not an easy task. What about Herzl, who never put on tefillin in his life? You're going to put him outside the box? All he did was found the Jewish state. How do you figure out who's a good Jew and who isn't a good Jew? Who counts and who doesn't? Here's my suggestion. Presumptively, Everyone is your friend until they prove otherwise. Every Jew is your sister and your brother until they prove, not they do something you don't like. Every Jew is going to do something you don't like. We're Jews. It's what we do. But until they definitively reject their sense of belonging, you embrace them. You realize that it is easier to reject. Look, think of a classroom. When a new kid comes into the classroom, the easiest thing to do is for the kids to turn away. You always reject the new kid. The child who turns to that new kid and smiles and says, "Sit by me," that's the one. That's the one whose model we have to follow. I hear Jews saying all the time these days, it's really the right of the political spectrum or the left of the political spectrum that are our friends. I'm not willing to give up on any wing. I want friends everywhere, and I'm not going to write off any group, any political side of the spectrum, any followers of any politicians, because, my friends, first of all, we can't afford it, and second of all, it's a foolish way to live our lives. Remember, God made human beings before God made Jews, which ought to tell you that Jews are human beings. And therefore, we share the most important things in common with all human beings everywhere. Everywhere, everywhere. Now let me tell you a story. Last year, my niece, before she entered college, decided she was going to go to Africa and work in an orphanage. So she did. They had never had anyone volunteer for this orphanage before. Half the children were afflicted with AIDS. It was a godforsaken place. The man who ran the orphanage is a saint by any definition. He and his wife gather these children together and they take care of them and they educate them, and those that live learn something, because all of their parents, almost without exception, have died, most of them of AIDS. He certainly never met a Jew before. And before she were about to leave, you know what he asked her? He said, "Please give me a Jewish blessing." So she did. She gave him the same blessing that we offered to the bar and bat mitzvahs here this morning, the Birkat Kohanim. And then he asked for her parents' address at home. And he wrote my brother and sister-in-law the most beautiful letter about how he knew nothing of Judaism, had learned nothing of Judaism, but if this is the kind of child that a Jewish family raises, he knows it is a beautiful and a holy tradition. Now, she didn't go there to tell this man how wonderful Judaism was. She went there because there were other human beings who needed her. But that's what we have the power to do. All the people who were here that night, who have never set foot in a synagogue, and there were hundreds of them who'd never set foot in a synagogue, now they have an impression of Judaism as a tradition that is not afraid, is not defensive, is not closed, but is open to others. That's what we need to do. It's better for Israel, it's better for Judaism, and it's better for humanity. When we talk about being Or LaGoyim, a light to the nations, what that means is specifically a light. The amazing thing about light is when it's on, everyone benefits. If you walked into this room, the fact that it was lit up wouldn't matter if you were a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim. You would be able to see because there is light. The more light we bring into this world, the more the world will benefit. And remember, going back to Bereshit, on what day does God create light? You tell me, you know. The very first day, Vayehi Or. On what day is the sun created? The fourth day. So there's light in the world that has nothing to do with the sun. That's us. That's the light of goodness, the light of kindness, the light of openness, the light of embrace, the light of love. It's the light that we saw this morning as not only our bar and bat mitzvahs, but their families felt that light. It's the light that we felt in this sanctuary and in the land of Israel on Yom HaAtzmaut. It's the light that the Jewish people needs to bring to the world for the Jewish people's sake and for the sake of the world. So, let there be light. Shabbat Shalom.